Okay. Pop quiz. Yep. Yes. Did you say uh-oh? Mm-hmm. Okay. Pop quiz. Why? Didn't you do the homework? Yeah. Didn't you study? Yeah. I know you're not prepared. But isn't that what a pop quiz is, right? You're right. Like it's, you should have made more noise. What? Today's pop quiz is a restaurant pop quiz. So who does not go to restaurants at all? Everybody goes to restaurants? Yes? Okay, then we'll be fine. All right, and there's only pop quiz, so that means I think there's only 10. Yeah. Okay. Number one, what is the, I'm going to give you, it's a multiple choice, okay? So I'm going to give you the answers, and you just pick which one. What is the federal minimum wage for tipped workers? A, $10.75 per hour, B, $7.25 per hour, C, $2.13 per hour?
C.
Okay, yes. You got it right. But C is correct. $2.13 is the federal minimum wage for tipped workers. Okay. Number two, the federal minimum wage for tipped workers has not been raised since 1991. What else happened in 1991? A, the first website was created, building on the recent invention of the World Wide Web by Tim Berners-Lee, a Unitarian Universalist. That's A. B, Mikhail Gorbachev sat down. That's B. And C, the movies My Girl and Fried Green Tomatoes were released. Or D, all of the above. C, you guys are like the AP class. And three, speaking of Fried Green Tomatoes, what was the name of the restaurant they ran? Yes, that's correct. The Whistle Stop Cafe is the correct answer. Smarty pants. Back to the present day, what percentage of restaurant workers are unionized? A, more than 50%, B, 10%, C, less than 0.1%. Less than 0.1% is the correct answer. Five, Unitarian minister John M. Scott is one of the people credited with inventing the ice cream sundae. A, true, B, false? That's right, must be true. Six, what percentage of restaurant, aren't you supposed to have some good, you know, it's a pop quiz and I'm really nice. Okay, number six, what percentage of restaurant workers do not have paid sick days? A, 35%, B, 90%, C, 98%. Yes, B. B is the correct answer. 90% of restaurant workers do not have paid sick days. Yeah, uh-oh. Seven. According to a recent survey by the Restaurant Opportunities Center United, ROC, Restaurant Opportunities Center United, what percentage of restaurant worker respondents reported having cooked, prepared, or served food while sick? Well, this is not so bad either. I'm giving you a clue. A, one-third, two-thirds is B, or C, nearly all. They're just telling. Let's try two-thirds is the correct answer. Two-thirds reported serving while sick. Eight, the television sketch comedy Portlandia includes a skit in which two diners visit a restaurant and ask questions about the chicken being served. Did you see this one? You say, where was your chicken raised? And what was his name? And could I see his papers, please? Yes, it's, who are the two actors that star in Portlandia? Tina Fey and Alec Baldwin, A. Fred Armisen and Carrie Bronstein, B. And yes, that's correct, B. You should watch that. Just Google in Portlandia and chicken and you'll get it. Nine, what recently published book will expose the working conditions in the restaurant industry? A, like behind the kitchen door. is correct. And 10, what can you and other supporters do to help improve conditions for restaurant workers? A, buy the book behind the kitchen door. B, organize a book group in your congregation to read behind the kitchen door. C, contact Congress in support of raising the minimum wage for tip workers. D, so you did great. But what does this have to do with worship? For the month of September, we have returned again. We have both begun, if you remember back at the beginning of the month, on September 1st, we took a look at labor. We considered the need for both bread and roses. We affirmed how unions contribute to support workers and move us all toward healthier lives. And then specifically, we were asked to consider the conditions of the recycling workers in Alameda County. And now, as this month comes to a close, I'd like to ask us to join together in a common read and reap the benefits of reading together a selected book. A common read, especially when we do it with our religious community, can be an enriching experience. The rewards include the consideration of the moral imperatives of the subject by giving a diverse group of people a shared experience, some shared language, and basis for deep, meaningful conversations. I'm really glad that we've been doing this for the last few years as Unitarian Universalists as a whole, and in this congregation in particular. We read 2 years ago The Death of Yoseline, Immigration Stories, and then this last year we read The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in an Age of Colorblindness. So you might recall last year we gathered together as a group for a facilitated discussion, but even beyond the organized gathering, I heard mention from various people of the effect that the book had on people, and then they continued in conversation with each other in one way or another. For me, it felt especially relevant last year that Michelle Alexander was a graduate of Stanford Law School, and she spent formative years of her career working for the ACLU in Northern California. The Common Read has as its center a book chosen each year by a committee of the Unitarian Universalist Association. And if we want, we can join in helping choose that book, because they take suggestions from individuals or from congregations, and we can say why we would like a particular book chosen. But what this does is it offers us a chance to go deeper on a subject that's relevant, not only to the moral imperative of the collective work that we have chosen as a faith community, but also help us strengthen our identity and practice. The subject of the Common Read also would provide us an opportunity to take action, if so desired, either on an individual basis or as a larger faith community. So it's probably obvious now that the book for this year's chosen Common Read is Behind the Kitchen Door by Saru Jayaraman. I do that wrong, even though I've said it a million times. Jayaraman. Saru is another Californian, and specifically, she lives in Oakland. She's currently the director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley. And she's a labor lawyer, and having worked in a restaurant herself. And in fact, she didn't really know much about what went on in restaurants until after the Twin Towers fell. She got a call then from a union leader who was representing workers from the upscale Windows on the World. Do you remember that restaurant? It was way up at the top of one of the Twin Towers on the 107th floor, I think. 79 workers had lost their lives that morning. In fact, most of them were people of color who had come in early to prepare food for a banquet. But there still were remaining workers from that restaurant, over 300 people. And afterwards, the owner of the restaurant created a new restaurant, and He promised the workers who had worked at Windows on the World that he would rehire them. And the folks wanted him to make good on that promise, which he was not. He said that these workers weren't up to the level needed to work in this new restaurant he had opened. So that's when they got a hold of Saru, and they were able then from their activism to secure employment for a number of more staffers. And as a result of the success that they had, they established this nonprofit that's called ROC, Restaurant Opportunities Center. They call it ROC United. Now, the book cover, I put it on the cover of the bulletin because it's designed really to make us kind of curious, right, with a little porthole style windows providing just a glimpse of what's going on in the kitchen. I think the point of the windows is that, I don't know if anybody here has ever worked in a restaurant. Has anybody ever worked in a restaurant? You want to make sure you don't hit the person coming through the other side, right? You don't want to slam into that person and have them drop all their food. But for the most part, we don't know what's happening on the other side of that door. We only know from the stories of our own experience or maybe those told from friends or acquaintances. I got one of those stories yesterday. On Saturday morning, I go on my regular walk and I talked about with my friend what we were going to be doing here today, and without prompt, she told me a story from her days as a server that sounded so eerily familiar to the story that was told by Saru Jayamaran's friend Daniel in the book. Daniel worked as an expediter, which is a job like a runner, the person who carries the food orders out to the dining customers. One time, Daniel dropped one of the two hot plates he was carrying because another runner bumped into him. And by the way, I'm just going to back up and give you a little history on Daniel. He was an Ecuadorian immigrant, but he, at this point, when he was telling the story, he had been in the restaurant industry for almost 17 years. He had learned English and grew up and was very fluent, and he was a professional restaurant worker. So there are lots of mistakes that can be made with so much going on, but he was someone who was really was professional at what he did. So he dropped one of these two plates. He was carrying two plates, but one of the other runners bumped into him. And so he set the plate that he had managed to save back on the counter and turned and apologized to the chef and then turned around to pick up the dropped plate. As he kneeled down, the chef grabbed the saved plate on the counter and threw it at Daniel's back. The plate missed him by less than an inch. And he said, "If I had turned around, the chips from the broken plate would have flown in my eye." The interesting thing is that the story I heard yesterday, where a plate did hit the worker in the cheek, creating a nasty gash needing stitches. One of the repeated stories is of discrimination. Daniel and my friend's Southern California tale both told of brutality and discrimination based on ethnicity. It's a common practice that jobs, raises, and promotions are based on race and gender. The darker the color of the worker's skin, the further back in the kitchen they work. The code for this practice is called table talk, and I'll let you look that up more after you leave here. And women are hired dependent upon their looks, and they're often sexually harassed in the workplace. A year ago, when I attended General Assembly, this work that the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee has already taken up was already in place, and I picked up little business-sized cards that were supplied by the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. They were designed to give to servers at the restaurants when we left our tips, informing them of their rights and explaining the issues of minimum wage, proper working conditions, and the issues of paid sick days. I took the cards, but I didn't use them. I felt uncomfortable. I somehow rationalized that our California laws provided a minimum wage of $8 rather than the $2.13 rate, which is the federal sub-minimum wage rate that actually has been stuck there since we talked about those movies that you remember from way back in 1991. In many states around the country, however, this is the pay for tipped workers. But I am aware that outside the city of San Francisco, which has passed a new law, San Francisco proper, 90% of restaurants don't pay sick pay. And workers still face poor conditions and discrimination and exploitation. There are 10 million workers in the rapidly growing restaurant industry. When we think about it, we eat out at a rate unlike the time when many of us were growing up. And these are some of the lowest paying jobs. So now, welcome to the NRA. You know the NRA, right? That's the National Restaurant Association. And yet, not ironic, this is another powerful lobbying organization, formerly run by, for many years, run by former presidential candidate and pizza chain owner Herman Cain. This organization struck a deal back in 1991 for tipped workers to be paid at $2.13 an hour. And the National Restaurant, if you wonder, well, like, what else do? They are the ones who've declared that pizza is a vegetable and ketchup is a vegetable. Those things were lobbied activities. Yes, did you not know? That's part of the quiz. Pizza is a vegetable. But they are actively working, lobbying to keep paid sick days from becoming law. And that even if you see that as part of the minimum wage, they're trying to get that shifted, to get that taken off. Darden, do you know about Darden? They are the full-service restaurant chain and parent company of restaurants like Olive Garden and Red Lobster. Their company and some of their competitors lobby heavily to keep the wage that stagnant at $2.13. So I looked it up this morning. Darden is making 4 to 5% profit margin. Now, other successful companies are what? Like Walmart. Walmart makes 1% profit, and Darden is making 4 to 5% to September of 2013. They make that much. But mostly in the news, I just hear their complaints against Obamacare and how it will break them. And yet, there are restaurants who are stepping up, taking the high road. Celebrity chefs are included, like Tom Colicchio. Many places are providing good wages and good working conditions and have created a group called RAISE, which is an acronym. I can't tell it to you right now, but it is an alternative restaurant association. These employers believe in paid sick days, they believe in a minimum wage, and they are paying a livable wage. Some of these businesses, these restaurants, pay what they call a thrivable wage. And guess what? Guess how those restaurants are doing? They are doing well and making healthy profits. So, what is our ethical calling? What does our faith tell us? Our seventh principle speaks theologically about the interdependent web as it reminds us of our connection to the earth. But here, not just plants and animals, as Eric Schlosser said, but people too. Because we are connected, we care for the earth and its people. Regardless of a restaurant's compensation policy, all restaurant workers should receive a stable base wage that allows them to feed themselves and their families. not to have to rely on food stamps. Mark Bittman, the food writer for the New York Times, explains it this way. He says, if you care about sustainability, the capacity to endure, it's time to expand our definition to include workers. So I invite us today. We don't have a table outside the door where you can purchase the book here, but you can go online. And if you buy the book actually through some of the sites like Amazon and Powell's Books, and we will, or the UUA bookstore, we'll all go together to help lift this book up so that it hits the bestseller list. So I just saw that the author was interviewed on Michael Krasny a few weeks ago. You might have heard that, and she's been interviewed other places. Let's read together and see what we might learn and discuss together. Faithfully, we'll do so. May it be so. Amen, and blessed be.